Welcome to the Lucra Podcast. I'm your host, Mindy Kinnis. My goal is to fan the flame of the dream in your heart. As my guests and I share our journeys on the path to success, you'll get an insider's look at how we got to where we are and the beliefs that create our reality. When you follow your heart path to ignite your mind and delight your spirit, you can create a lucrative life of freedom and purpose. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, my friends. I am super stoked for today's conversation. I am here with my friend Wayne Mullins, who is the founder of Ugly Mug Marketing. Wayne, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Mindy. I'm excited for our chat.
Yeah, I'm excited too. And where I want to start with it is a little quick story about how you and I met. You and I were both speakers at Entreport's live event called Entrepalooza. And one of the nights they had a speaker's dinner. So all of us are in this big room, all having dinner together. And I'm looking around and I'm like, dear God, there was a lot of people in the industry, like big names that I'm sure our audience would recognize. But let's just say they were all intoxicated, loud, just being total yahoos. And you and I happened to be sitting next to each other. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so happy because there's everybody else. And then there's you and I sitting there like being quiet, talking about books and being our like normal introvert selves. And like, this saved my whole experience tonight. So I want to thank you for that, first of all. And that just leads me to introduce you further to our audience. Let's talk a little bit about what you do in Ugly Mug Marketing.
Yeah, so I do remember that dinner very fondly, and I remember the fact that you described it perfectly well. Like, it was my worst nightmare stepping into that room.
Exactly.
With all of those people, with all of those big names, and all of them, for the most part, extroverts, and here I am trying to find the corner to go hide in.
Right, but just also completely obnoxious, like with alcohol, with whatever, and you and I are like, oh, so what are you reading recently?
Yep. No, it was great. Yeah. So to answer your question, we are what I would say a results-based marketing agency. And I know that sounds super cliche. And I know that's what everyone talks about and everyone, you know, claims to do. I think one of the things that makes us very unique and very different is that we don't force our clients into long-term contracts. So you come work with us. We often say, give us 2 months. If by the end of 2 months, you aren't convinced we're the right partner for you, like let's part ways. We don't want this to be drawn out. We don't want to force you for another, you know, 4 months or 8 months or whatever that may be. So it forces us, number one, to stay focused on what is most important, not for us, but for our clients.
So what are some of the things that you help your clients do?
So we do everything from web development, SEO, pay-per-click, social media, lead generation, everything from television, radio, print, billboards. So I guess you could say we're kind of a full service marketing agency.
Cool. I'm really curious where the name came from, Ugly Mug Marketing. Is there a story behind that?
Yeah, there is. So Ugly Mug actually comes from a quote by David Ogilvy. So Ooh. David Ogilvy, co-founder of Ogilvy & Mather, and inside his offices, he had a quote or a saying that he would often say, which was, I would rather you come show me an ad that is ugly but effective over one that's beautiful but isn't. And so from day one, that was the North Star. In other words, in this industry, for those not overly familiar, this industry is driven by awards, design awards, creativity awards, web awards, all these awards. And the problem is, in the agency world, it's very easy to get distracted by those awards. In other words, you end up pursuing the award more than the results for the clients.
I want to dig into this a little bit more because as you were talking about that ugly but effective, I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so the issue for many, many people. So a lot of my audience is early stage or even aspiring entrepreneurs. Many of them are coaches. And so many of them, and I know I was this way myself at the beginning, were like fascinated and totally set on like the perfect website and just gorgeous and beautiful and all of that. And now I know the answer to this, but I'd love to hear it from you, your expertise. Like, are we just completely focused on the wrong thing?
Yes. So there's this balance between, I mean, there is this balance, right? If you are positioning yourself as a trusted expert, an advisor, or a business that's going to have premium products maybe, and someone comes to your website and it looks like a kindergartner designed it, then you're going to have issues. But on the other hand, where I see this all the time is that people obsess over copying what someone else does. So the number one salesperson we have for our new websites are the competitors of the people who reach out to us. So let's say, for example, the coffee shop across the street. When they see a competitor, a competing coffee shop, get a new website, they will look at that and they'll say, man, ours looks so terrible. Look how beautiful theirs is. So then the coffee shop will reach out and say, hey, our website's outdated. Like, we need to bring it up to the next level. And the problem is when we get into that comparison game, right? We all know that comparison is our enemy, you know, in our personal lives, but it's so true in business as well. So we have to be careful about balancing those two things and obsessing over things that really don't matter.
Thank you. So for all of you that have heard me preach about this, I just wanted you to hear it in yet another voice that is not mine, just saying, like, let's focus on the stuff that does matter as opposed to all the like pretty little things. I actually was one time shocked, like I almost fell out of my chair because this girl was saying, hey, I have this landing page that is so ugly, but it's the best converting page that I had. And I'm like, can I see that? She sent it to me and I'm like, yeah, I mean, it was ugly, but it was doing the job and getting it done. I'm like, okay, so clearly less concern about that. But to your point, if it does look like a kindergartner drew it or created it, maybe not the look you're going for either.
Yeah, you have to balance that, you know, credibility and trust play into that equation and what people see. It has to match the image that you want to portray. But so often people end up with very beautiful, over-designed, meticulous, perfect websites, and then they don't return phone calls. They take days to respond to emails. Their proposals look like garbage. And so, right, we have to be consistent across the board. And most of us, particularly in the early days, we cannot afford the time nor the money to be perfect in all of those areas. So instead, we need to focus on what matters most, what's going to drive the needle based on where I am, what stage I'm in my current business.
Right on. So because you see so many different kind of behind the scenes aspects of business, because you're working with so many different business owners, what are some of the big challenges these days that you're seeing?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is playing the Me Too game. And we kind of talked about that. So, you know, when they see the competitor is doing really well on Instagram, we've got to do really well on Instagram. Or if they're now hopping on Threads, right? We've got to go be on Threads because our competitor's on Threads. And I think, you know, what's so important to remember is there's a big difference between assets and actions. And so when we look around at competitors, what we are seeing are the actions they are taking. And rarely do we spend the time as entrepreneurs to kind of peel back that onion and look and say, okay, I see the actions they're taking, but what is the actual asset that they are building? So is that a responsive audience on social media? Is that they're driving people to opt into their, you know, email newsletter list? Is it that, you know, whatever that thing may be, what is the actual asset that they are truly building? And sometimes there may not even be an asset. In other words, you could be looking at a competitor who is that competitor you're looking at is simply looking at another competitor. So we have this long line of playing copycat and no one is really focused on the results. You know, I would just kind of conclude that thought with this, that I don't remember the exact numbers, but like within 5 years, 80% of businesses fail. Within 10 years, it's, you know, 92% or whatever that is. And I believe you could attribute most of that failure to the fact that everyone is copying what everyone else is doing. And if you're copying things that someone else is doing and they're in the process of failing and going out of business, you're following in their coattails. You are one step behind them down that path.
That's some serious talk right there. And I think you're probably absolutely correct. So in this conversation of comparing ourselves to others, one of the things that I see very often, especially as I work with newer coaches specifically, they start comparing what they're doing or their results to, let's say, someone like me or someone who has been on this journey for quite a lot longer than they have. And I'm like, hold on, you cannot compare like your today, which is beginning, to my today, which is 16 years in. Like, that doesn't make any sense if we, you know, pull it back and actually look from that perspective. So I would love to hear from you, because it is really all about the journey. Tell me about your journey of Ugly Mug Marketing. Like, when did you start it? How did it go at first? Any, you know, crazy stories in the mix there? Because I love that stuff, because then people who are, let's say, listening to this now, and they're like, you know what, I'd really love to start a marketing company, but they can't compare to you today.
Yeah. Yeah. So my journey with Ugly Mug started almost 15 years ago. That's when I started this full time. And, you know, Mindy, I wish I could say that, you know, our journey was this linear, straight line up and to the right.
It never is.
But it wasn't that. I started this business having sold a previous company. And so I came into this thinking that I knew everything about business, that I knew everything about how to build another company. And it took
me... This is already going to be a good story.
Yeah, it was literally probably 3 to 4 years before I became self-aware enough to realize that my ego was destroying my company. And it wasn't because I externally was going around bragging about how great my marketing company was at the time. It was more internal. So it was this internal dialogue that I am so smart because I've just come off exiting and selling another company that I know how to do this. And then when things weren't working out, I was blaming everyone else. I was blaming the fact that the prospects were stupid. They were dumb. They didn't understand marketing and all these things. And so it was a very long and slow process for me to become self-aware enough to understand that the failure in my marketing company for those first few years had nothing to do with the externals. It had nothing to do with the marketplace, which I started the company in the middle of the housing crisis, late 2008, 2009, in that time frame.
Me too. This is the same.
Yeah. So it was easy for me to look around though and blame those things, right? Blame the economy or blame the fact that prospects didn't understand marketing. But the reality was none of those were the truth. The truth at the end of the day was I was to blame. It was my responsibility.
Wayne, I love this so much because you and I, like, we haven't even talked recently. You probably don't even know what this show is really about, but you are so speaking my language. So much of what I talk about is like, let's look internally and we are the result, whether that's good or bad. So I would love to dig into that a little bit more with you. How did you make that transition from, you know, looking outside and saying it's all of that out there, whether it's people, economy, whatever, to understanding and recognizing, oh, it's me.
Yeah. So one of the things that I would say coming into this business, the one thing that I did right was I hired a coach from the very beginning. I'm a firm believer in having a coach. The problem was that I was smarter than the coach, meaning my ego said, the coach doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, I just sold another company. I was very successful at exiting that company. Like, the coach, yeah, they're beneficial. They give me some tips and advice, but like, I'm smarter than the coach. And so the big pivot for me was when I fully accepted and understood what is called the Johari window, which is this whole idea that there are things that are unconscious to us, but are conscious to other people. In other words, there's things about me and my leadership that I cannot see, but other people with the right perspective and the right eyes can see those things. But it doesn't matter, Mindy. So let's say that we were in a coaching relationship and you could point out things to me, which is what happened in the early days. You could say, I really think you should be not focusing here and focusing over here instead. And you may see those things, but until I am willing to admit that right, you see things that I can't, until I'm willing to let my ego go, it's not going to matter. So the transition point for me, though, was when I accepted that fact that there are things that other people can see about myself, about my leadership, about my ability to grow a business that I can't see, that things begin to change.
Was there something that triggered that acceptance? Or, I mean, because I know that for a lot of people, it's only when things get like so bad that they're like, well, shit, that's not working. So let me do something, you know, anything else. And then, oh, by the way, now I recognize that. Or like, was there anything that kind of started that journey?
Yeah. So three letters that started that journey. Those three letters are FBI, as in the FBI Federal Bureau of Investigation. Yeah. So
I'm so excited about this story.
So we were actually investigated by the FBI for something.
Wait, we meaning like your previous company or you as a person or what?
Me as in Ugly Mug Marketing. We as in the current company.
What?
Yeah. So there's a whole story behind it. And it came out of the blue. Nothing ever came of it, meaning we never had to go to trial. We never had to go to court. They very quickly discovered that we had no involvement in this incident. But the super quick version of the story is that at the time, I shared an office with a very good friend of mine who happens to be from Kenya. He was born and raised in Kenya, came over to the U.S. on a running scholarship, and has built at that time, it was one of the fastest growing customer ticketing software systems in the world. Okay. Today, they are the largest open source customer support ticketing software in the world, in the globe. So we shared an office space together. And I was driving one day to lunch, and down the road, all of a sudden my phone rings, and this is a guy I know who does IT work here in our local community. And he said, first words out of his mouth were, "Hey, who is the Kenyan that works for you?" And, you know, I immediately knew who he was because, you know, we're in a very small community. There's not that many people from Kenya who are here. And I said, you know, I don't have a Kenyan who works for me, but my, you know, office mate, my friend is from Kenya. Why, what's going on? And he said, well, the local high school had their entire school system hacked. And when the students got caught, they said that the Kenyan who works for Ugly Mug Marketing had put them up to this plot to hack it. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, this is crazy. Like, what do you mean? And he said, well, they hacked into the system to change grades, right? Which makes sense for high schoolers to want to do, hack in the sure. system, change grades. But the code they used opened up the school's admin portal, which is a private school. And so all the parents' banking information and credit card information was then leaked out, right? It was stolen. And so when the kids got caught, they said that Peter was his name, my friend's name. We're still good friends, but put them up to this. So fast forward, I'm going to jump to the abbreviated version of this, and then we can come back and fill in details if you'd like. But basically, what had happened, Peter, having grown up in rural Kenya, Peter never touched a computer until he came to the U.S. in college. And so Peter's a huge believer in the power of learning to code and the power of being able to create things through code. And so Peter had met, our office was around the corner from a coffee shop, had met some high school students who asked him if they could teach, he could teach them how to code. And he agreed to do that. So they would meet at the coffee shop. He would teach them how to code. And so they ended up going online and finding this software that allowed them to hack into the system. Peter was not involved at all. Nothing ever came of the investigation for Peter either. But it was during the course of that, what happened in the small community that we live in was word spread quickly that Ugly Mug Marketing had put these high school students up to a hacking incident, and that our entire company existed to steal credit card information from people. And so, as you can imagine, a few years in the business, struggling to get this thing growing. My ego, again, was a big factor in that growth struggle. And then we're investigated by the FBI, which quickly spreads throughout the community. Our competitors here found out about it, and they began spreading the word that we were being investigated. Do not talk to us. Do not be involved with us. So we lost literally six figures worth of contracts during that period of time, all because the rumors that were being spread about us, which were completely false, completely made up. But it was in the midst of that crisis that I finally was at wit's end. You know, I had no hope. And so it was at that point that I finally admitted to myself that I had to listen to my coach, that he could see things that I couldn't see. And that's when things begin to change.
What a crazy story that I don't know if you know this, but Kenya has a very, very dear place in my heart. I used to live there. I've been there many, many times. And so like, as soon as you said that, I'm like, and I can just picture this Kenyan person in small town, kind of southern area, like, whoa. How then, let's talk about like then getting through that, because all of us, I would say, have some big thing. Like for me, it was bankruptcy and basically being homeless. Like there's always some story, you know, that's kind of this turning point or thing. But I don't know, I feel like it would be so much more personal when it's like people are not even believing you or your company or your mission or whatever. Like there's a smear campaign going, you know, from your competitors. How did you get over that?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you that I gracefully, you know, admitted that I needed help and that, but that's not my story. I mean, my story was or is that, you know, that scenario and the fact that the company was already struggling, right? We weren't growing at the rate I thought we could. That led me to severe depression, to the point of suicide. I had, you know, lots of suicidal thoughts, contemplated suicide. And at the time as well, you know, I'm married, we just had at that time, our third son had just been born. In the process of trying to grow this company, you know, we had sold our house. We'd bought 50 acres of land after selling our previous company. We'd bought a bunch of land, which was going to be our, you know, future home site. We sold our new vehicles. I mean, we sold everything we had, our boat. We sold all the things. And we moved into a 700 square foot, little tiny house. We bring home our son from the hospital, our third son. His little crib playpen thing is set up in the kitchen dining room area of the house. And so here I am, having come off of the success of growing a previous company and selling it, to now feeling like I have completely let my family down. My business is, you know, almost at this point non-existent as we're going through this FBI investigation. And again, it goes back to the fact that there were people in my life at the time who were willing to speak truth to me. And if it weren't for those people, so even during that time, it was a coach on the outside. I probably wouldn't have made it through that had it not been for the coach that I had. And the thing that where the rub comes in for so many people and for me at that time was, on the one hand, I'm paying for this coach. On the other hand, I can't afford to pay for the coach. Like, my wife is driving a minivan with a busted transmission that is in need of repair. So, you know, every time you pull up at a red light, you would have to shift it in neutral and turn off the car and restart it, or else it'd get stuck in gear. And yet the money I'm spending that could have bought her another vehicle or could have at least fixed the transmission, I'm spending on a coach. But had it not been for the coach, I certainly wouldn't have the business I have today.
Yeah. So I think you might say that it was worth it, even in the midst of that struggle, in the midst of it not even making logical sense. Like, why am I not paying for a new transmission? I'm paying for coaching. But yet, look at the fruits of that. Look at what it has created in your life.
Yeah. It is the problem I think we get into when we look at coaching relationships is we're too short-sighted. Right. So we look at it like, I'm spending X dollars a month on this coach. I expect an ROI next week, next month. Yeah. And the reality is, it's a long-term investment. So the coach that I originally had, you know, 15 years ago, 14 years ago, 13 years ago, in that window of time, I'm still reaping the rewards from that relationship and that money all those years ago. So it's an investment that I think, again, we get so short-sighted when we look at our investment in coaches.
Yeah. And also the idea that it had to be you to begin to accept those transformative things. You know, the coaches can say whatever they want, but I'm like, the work is yours. You know, it's always ourselves, whoever that is. So I think that's a really powerful perspective. I want to kind of tie these like business struggle conversations into a little bit of a conversation around money, because that ultimately is the struggle. How do I take care of my family? How do I eat? How do I, you know, get my car fixed when something happens? What has been kind of your money evolution, especially because coming from a successful exit previously to then having the shit hit the fan, like in a different way, and then to where you are now? I'd love to hear some of the, maybe the inside bits of that money journey.
Yeah. So money and the money journey for me is still a work in progress. You know, I'm a firm believer in this idea of what we focus on expands. And the problem that I find that I run into and that so many people run into is that we confuse the things that we see in front of us as the actual reality. Meaning, you know, I look at the bank account today and I'm like, man, things are terrible. There's this sense, I'm making this up, but like there's this sense of lack and there's this sense of all these things. And so as I focus on the lack, that expands. I find more reasons to be fearful, more reasons to not take good calculated risk. Whereas on the flip side, regardless of what the bank account says, what I choose to focus on is going to expand. So if I choose instead to focus on the fact that, look, the bank account may say these things, but you know what? There's almost 8 billion or 8 billion people on this planet. All of them probably have some money. And, you know, maybe not all of them are going to be willing to give us money for what we do, but there's certainly tens of thousands of people out there who don't yet know about us, who have money, who are looking for someone to solve problems that we can solve. And if instead I focus and flip my mindset to that and I focus on abundance, everything gets so much easier. The problem is we have to remove ourselves from what we believe to be the reality of our wealth and of our money situation.
Awesomely stated. This is a question that I ask all of my guests, and I'd be very curious about your answer, but what is wealth to you? How would you personally define wealth?
You know, if you'd asked me this maybe 6 months ago or a year ago, my answer probably would have been different, but as cliche and maybe as cheesy as this answer sounds, my answer is wealth is a state of mind. You can have $2 in your bank account and have the feeling of abundance and wealth, or you can have $10 million in your bank account and have the feeling of lack and, you know, scarcity in your life. And so to me, wealth is about, again, it's about a presence, it's about a state of mind, and it's really about a way of being. Because oftentimes, again, we're so focused on wealth in terms of dollars and cents, but wealth is not just about dollars and cents, although that's certainly the American connotation of wealth. Wealth is about the abundance of everything in our lives. We live in a truly abundant world. You know, there's water, there's air, just the energy. I mean, there's all these things that are so abundant around us. And again, it goes back to our focus. What are we choosing to focus on in those moments?
Yeah, I love the idea that just maybe a year ago, you would have answered that question differently. What maybe has changed either from a year ago or even from like previous to that? Like what has been a shift in your money mindset?
It's the idea of that quote of, you know, what we focus on expands. And truly embracing that idea and that concept, really that belief in that. Because, you know, I run a business. We have 15 employees. We have a very large payroll. We have full benefits for all of our team. And so on the one hand, I've got all these concrete, quote unquote, real things, right? Real payroll that has to be done every 2 weeks. We have insurance premiums. We have all these things that are real and concrete. And so on the one hand, I have that responsibility to the team to make sure all that is safe and secure. And on the other hand, when it comes to actually the feeling of abundance and the feeling of, you know, being prosperous, it has nothing to do with taking care of all these things over here. It's something completely separate. It's detached. Those two things live in two different worlds. And so for me, it's that realization that, you know, what numbers and things on paper, right, in the bank account, like, yeah, those are things that are there, but that's not the reality that we're creating in the future. And that's not the way, that doesn't have to dictate how I feel today. That doesn't have to dictate the way I show up for other people today.
100%. Like that distinction between what is internal and then what is external. So I absolutely love that. I want to ask you a question. Another thing that I ask all of my guests, and this is based on an acronym called HERB, H-E-R-B. I'm going to walk you through each step. And what my question is really is like, what are the things that help you become who you are today? The things that you do, the things that you create, and you know, how you can be productive and stay in that abundant mindset. So the H in HERB stands for habits. What kinds of habits do you have that help you with those things?
Yeah, so I am by nature, I think, your typical traditional entrepreneur. I've never been tested, but I would probably test and come out somewhere, you know, ADHD, chasing the next magic silver bullet, you know, jumping from thing to thing. Like that's my makeup. That's who I am. But what I've learned over the years is that for me to succeed, and I don't just mean success in business, I mean success in life and success for myself, I have to be very firm and very committed to my habits. So the habits for me look the same. So in other words, I get up at the same time, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And the reason I have to do that is because I don't have a lot of willpower. And so I just make it so there's no exceptions. Like I'm going to get up at 5:05 a.m., 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Wait, and the why reason is it 5:05? Like what's this? Is there a reason for that specific, like as opposed to 5 o'clock?
5:05 just feels a little later than 5 a.m.
Fair enough.
I don't know. It's a mental thing for me.
Got it.
So 5:05 a.m., the alarm goes off and I'm very rigid in my morning routine. So get up, I go make some hot tea. I come back, I meditate. I then read and journal. I then exercise. I then get ready, go to work. It depends on if it's a weekend. I'm not coming in the office. But those morning things are non-negotiable for me. So it doesn't matter if it's Christmas Day. It doesn't matter if I'm, even if I'm sick, like unless I'm like knocked out, like super, super sick, I'm going to do those things every single morning. They're non-negotiable for me.
I love that. So the E in HERB stands for environment. Now, I just want to make a quick note for those of you that are listening on the podcast, as opposed to watching this video on YouTube, you should probably check out the video because what I'm about to ask him, he's got a pink couch behind him and all kinds of interesting things in this thing. So how do you set up your environment for your greatest productivity and success?
Number one is the acknowledgement that your environment does directly impact everything else in your life. So I believe that, you know, we have to structure our environment to support who we want to become, not who we are today, but who we want to become. So my desk at home, where I meditate in the morning, where I journal and where I read in the morning, is set up in a way that there are no distractions. There's nothing that's going to pull my attention away from doing the things that I need to get done during that time. The other thing that's very interesting for us at Ugly Mug Marketing is most of our team is here in office. We do have some that work remote in other states, but we operate under this idea that we do 50-minute focus time blocks. And then we have 10 minutes of distraction time. And so we, number one, we are in an industry that is a creative industry, right? Where you need feedback, you need collaboration, you need all these other things from other people. And so typically when people first start with us, they can't wrap their heads around how are we going to collaborate? How are we going to, you know, be creative when for 50 minutes, it's like communication silence. And then we have 10-minute periods of distraction time. But we can schedule meetings with other people. So it's not like you can't have meetings during those times and collaborate and all those things. But that is an example of structuring an environment for maximum productivity during the day. So just like, you know, Cal Newport talks about in Deep Work, it takes those chunks of time to actually do productive creative work. So that's an example of structuring an environment that doesn't just affect me, but it affects our team and then trickles down to our clients as well.
That's a freaking awesome example too. I'm always talking about like how structure actually creates the boundaries or the guidelines for things like freedom and creativity and money. Like it, structure is ultimately the freedom. So I love that you've like built that into your work and the environment. So this one I'm probably most excited to ask you about because I'm sure you're going to have lots and lots of ideas on this. The R stands for resources, which could be books, coaches, programs, whatever it might be. But which ones, what resources have you really just been inspired by or have been like key in your development?
Yeah. First answer is going to be a coach. If you're an entrepreneur of any sort, you have to have a coach. Like, I don't care what level you're at. I don't care if you're just getting started. I don't care if you're running a billion-dollar a year company. You have to have a coach. Again, because all of us are guilty of not seeing things that other people can see. So that's resource number one. For the entire course of this journey at Ugly Mug Marketing, I have always had a coach of some sort, some form. And I typically select coaches based on where I'm trying to get to at a specific point in the future. And so that will shift and change as I grow the company. So right now, the coach that I'm working with technically really isn't a coach per se, but it's an outsourced CFO. So we're not at the size company yet where we need a full-time CFO, but I'm working directly with an outsourced CFO to ensure that we have the right processes and the right systems in place and that I fully understand them, right? I'm not a detail-oriented person. I don't want to look at P&Ls and balance sheets. Like that's not my thing. But at the same time, given where we are and where we're going, those things are becoming more and more important. So coaches, number one. Number two, I'm a believer in this whole idea of, you know, the most difficult person for you to ever lead is the person who's going to look back at you in the mirror every single morning. Mm. That is the most difficult person you will ever lead. So if that is true, which I believe it is true, the question then becomes, what are you doing to intentionally learn to lead yourself better? And so for me, that is constantly learning. So it's books, it's podcasts, it's audiobooks, it's, you know, YouTube videos, it's, you know, all of those things. Where I think so many people get in trouble though, is they're not intentional behind the selection. In other words, they'll hear somebody just talking about a book, and I'm guilty of this, and they're like, oh, that's a great, that sounds great, I'm gonna get that book and read it. But the problem is that book may not be applicable based on where you are and where you're trying to get to for this time. Now, if you want to read for enjoyment, great, read for enjoyment, read the book. But I believe that we should be intentional about selecting books, selecting videos, selecting all of these things that are in the path of where we are going. In other words, they give us those next steps and help illuminate that path for us.
So like what's something you've read recently that is just awesome?
So one of my most recent favorite books is called The Mountain Is You.
Oh, yeah.
By Brianna Weist. So again, it's not a leadership book. It's not a management book, but it's very much a book for me, timing-wise, it really spoke to me about kind of this whole idea of learning to lead myself a little better, leaning into that part of the equation more.
Yeah.
It's all about self-sabotage, how to overcome self-sabotage.
It's like the perfect book for what you're talking about.
Yeah. Another one, I just finished 10X is Easier Than 2X by Dr. Benjamin Hardy. It was a good book. I personally like his book, Who Not How, little bit better than that one. It's a tough question because I do read a lot. So it's a tough one for me.
That's why I'm like, talk to me about, because, you know, I have all the ideas. You and I both are very, very into books. So I totally appreciate that. Now let's get to the B in herb. The B stands for beliefs. What beliefs do you hold to be true, or even just the ways in which you see the world that have allowed you to create the success that you have?
Yeah, I think number one is this notion that your beliefs shouldn't change. And that is, in my opinion, that can be a very dangerous mindset to have. When we are so married to what we believe to be true, it leaves no room for the word that comes to mind is miracles, right? If we are so stuck in our beliefs that this is the way things work, like there's no room for miracles to show up for us in our lives. And so number one, I would say the belief that your beliefs can change and that your current belief today may not be your beliefs 3 years, 5 years down the road. So that's, I believe, the starting point for me.
It's huge. Anything else?
Other beliefs that I would say, you know, when I take that question, I lean into leadership a little bit. I think that one belief that so many entrepreneurs have, particularly as they start building and growing out their team, is this belief that employees can't be trusted or mm-hmm. that employees are only there for a paycheck. And again, what you focus on is going to expand. So if I approach my employees with this idea and this belief that they're only here for a paycheck, that they can't be trusted, then I'm going to find all the evidence in the world of that. And so one of the things, or one of the beliefs that I personally had to work really hard on, because by nature, I'm very suspicious of team members, right? Like that's my default. My default is to, you've got to prove to me that I can trust you. And so over the years, I've worked really hard on shifting that belief to, I'm going to default to trust, and you're going to have to prove to me that I shouldn't trust you.
Yeah.
So it's flopping that belief. And I see so many entrepreneurs get hung up in that, and they start complaining about employees and all the problems they have with employees. And my first question to them is, what do you believe to be true about employees?
Yeah, that's huge and very, very important in this industry, because people do get stuck on that kind of stuff. But I would just point out that you had that awareness first and foremost of like, oh, again, what you focus on expands. So what do I need to do? Like, what do I need to do? Take the responsibility yourself to actually create the change in you primarily. And then, oh, by the way, you're going to see different results. So that is awesome. I have one final question for you. Actually two, but this one is like, I'm really excited about this answer. If you were to speak to someone in our audience right now, someone that is earlier in the game, or maybe not even earlier, but they're just on the struggle bus, like they're just in it right now, what might you say to them to give them a bit of hope or a bit of inspiration?
I would say expect something different. I'm a huge believer in this idea that oftentimes our expectations are so tainted by our past that we keep repeating our past in the present. So until you actually expect something else and you believe something else is possible for you, you're going to keep making the same decisions through the same lens that you have in the past. And so until you expect something different, until you believe that something different, something better is possible for you, you're not going to act that way. So flip the question, what if my situation were to radically change tomorrow? What would I do today to be ready for that change? What would I do today to help bring that change that I want and need? I think, again, it's about a mindset. It's about operating from a position of lack, a position of desperation, flipping that to, you know, abundance, flipping it to a world of possibility and a world of expectation.
Heck yeah. Did you read that book, The Expectation Effect, I think it's called?
I didn't.
It's a good one. I would recommend it. I mean, not that you need it because you already get the concept, but it's like filled with all kinds of research and cool details around why that works and how that works and like that it does actually work. So all for that. Now, Wayne, if people are like, this guy's freaking awesome, I want to know more about him, or like Ugly Mug Marketing, where would you like them to go?
The simplest place, Mindy, is our website. And that's just uglymugmarketing.com. All of our social channels, email addresses, phone numbers are all right there on the channel or on the website.
Perfect. I will link to that for anyone that needs it. That is uglymugmarketing.com. Wayne, this has been absolutely awesome. I am super grateful for your time and for just your wisdom that you shared with my audience, and a little, throwback to our old days at Entrepalooza. I appreciate that too. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Mindy, for the opportunity.
Thanks ever so much for listening. Whenever you're ready, here are three ways I can help you create a more lucrative life. One,
Subscribe for free to my lucrative newsletter for weekly insights on business, money, and mindset. 2, join Club Lucra to connect with a like-minded community so that you don't have to go it alone. 3, work with me one-on-one to chart the course from where you are to where you want to be. Everything you need is at lucra.com. That's LUCRA.com. Lucra, where wealth equals well-being.